We're hitting on the NFL draft. We're hitting on the NBA playoffs and a whole lot more. And joining us to elevate this conversation is the CEO of Sumer Sports, which provides quantitative analysis to create precision for NFL teams in player acquisition and roster management. On top of that, he's a 28-year vet of the NFL. He spent 13 seasons as the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons. He is a two-time NFL Executive of the Year. He won a couple of Super Bowls as a member of the Patriots front office. He's a good friend of mine in the program. He is Thomas Dimitroff. Thomas, my man, how are things? How you doing?
Romy, I'm so excited to be on. It's crazy. This year's draft has been wild. I know you know that. Unbelievable.
No, it's been incredible. In fact, it's great to have you back on. Let me just follow you up right there. It is a crazy, wild draft. What makes it so, in your opinion, and what kind of stands out? What are your biggest takeaways?
Obviously, where we're going with offensive run versus, you know, no defensive players until 15. That, to me, is an unreal approach. That what that means, as you know, is there were better players, simply stated, on the offensive side of the ball in all. I think the quarterback situation, of course, which is probably a perfect segue into what you want to talk about. I really like this quarterback group this year, like a lot of people did, and I do believe there's not another quarterback group coming like this in the next year or two, so it might precipitate some reasons why people made certain moves. But I did love what you're getting in this quarterback group, to be honest with you.
We're talking to Thomas Dimitroff. All right, so what about, I mean, not only are you a former GM, but the former GM of the Falcons, you've already hit on this, but let me ask you, I mean, because you're qualified to weigh in on the team's decision to take Michael Penix Jr. after signing Kirk Cousins, what was your reaction as the pick was being made when you were co-hosting Sumer's live draft show on your YouTube channel?
I think I was taken aback only because, like a lot of people, I figured that it was going to be defensive-minded, given the fact that Raheem Morris is there and he's such a strong defensive coach. Understanding what they did, of course, even more so with Kirk Cousins. That said, I have been pretty outspoken that all teams should be looking up in the top three to decide whether they could potentially move up, including the Falcons, only to look at what is there. Everyone knew that would be massive booty, Jim, to go up into the top three. This guy, Michael Penix, it's not about drafting Michael Penix. He is a damn good quarterback. It's about the combination of the two, obviously, which has become complicated conversation for most here.
We're talking to Thomas Dimitroff. So if you're Kirk Cousins, he admitted that he was stunned by the pick. Of course, he's saying all the right things right now, but how do you think he really feels about that pick? And when Raheem says, hey, listen, he doesn't need to be looking over his shoulder, Thomas, does he need to be looking over his shoulder?
I think he needs to be every day of his life competing for his job because that is life in the NFL. And I think Kirk Cousins is a great guy. He's a great competitor. And Michael Penix is coming in not to be delaying this 5 years. He's not looking to wait for 5 years to play. He's a competitor. He's also 24 years old. So his mind is thinking, okay, maybe let's just get rolling on this. So I think both of these quarterbacks are going to be competing heavily to do what they're doing. Of course, when you pay a lot of money to Kirk Cousins, you're expecting, and this is one of the things that I was trying to deduce. I don't want to speak for Arthur Blank and the Falcons because that's not my place, but you know, as we've talked before, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, this is an opportunity to win now with Kirk Cousins, and you know, they're not expecting to win a handful of games. They're expecting to take this very far into the playoffs, potentially make a run at the Super Bowl. So there are big expectations to win now for this fan base that Arthur Blank knows is very, very important. He is one of the most competitive owners out there. He is about giving the fan base and the organization as much as they can financially to win and win now. That's where it becomes, you know, it becomes a debate, of course, in Atlanta.
Thomas Dimitroff is joining us. So you started off by saying it's pretty amazing. That first round opened up with 14 consecutive offensive players being taken. So not a ton of buzz surrounding the other side of the ball. What do you make, though, of the defensive players that came off the board? Like, for instance, who do you think are the defensive players that are going to prove to be the most valuable from this draft?
Oh, I sit there and I think about where some of these players are. Like Latu was a guy who came off. He was the first one off, right, at 15. I'm sure you've watched him. He's a guy that, you know, catches your attention on the ability to get up and around the corner and be a legit pass rusher. Everyone knows how important pass rushers are in this league. You and I have talked about that before as well. If you can't get a pass rusher and you're not affecting the quarterback, you're obviously in a really tough spot. I love what Philadelphia does. I don't know where you are with Howie Roseman on that. He's a trading monster. The fact that he gets Quinyon Mitchell, I mean, you get a guy like that in, you know, from Toledo, a guy who we think is one of the better cornerbacks to come along in a while, and he can trade around and move up and get him, as well as getting another corner in the second round in Cooper DeJean. I mean, these are important moves for them. Obviously, what people were thinking about, you know, where Minnesota does, where they get to and where they moved around, right? They were trading up and around. They get a really top-end pass rusher as well from Alabama. And, you know, these are all people that are affecting. But the fact that these players were going from 15 to 25, to me, is very, very interesting for the way that the defenses are going to develop in this league, right? That's a big deal.
You know, you mentioned you don't know where I come out on Howie Roseman. I think the guy's a freaking genius. Like, this guy's just playing the game at a different speed. You're somebody who's done that job. You know what it's like to be in that room. You know what it's like to work those phones. Where do you come out on Howie Roseman?
Same thing. Love Howie. Love Howie's aggressiveness. I am not a sit-on-the-hands type of person, as you probably know from my moves. I mean, I like the nickname of Trader Thomas. While I was here, because I was about moving up, not that you can't move back. Howie's very creative moving up, moving back, moving sideways. He'll always knock on the door looking for deals that will better that organization. You know what he did. He had to deal with Chip Kelly and that relationship. He came out on top of it. He continues to win there, which I think is admirable. And most people, though they may be jealous of his ability to be creative, they know that they all admire him beyond in this league.
I'll tell you what, Thomas, I don't know that if that guy were to call me, I don't know that I'm picking up the phone. I mean, like, you want to have confidence in your own abilities, of course, but I don't know that, given this guy's track record, I don't know that I want that phone call. You know, go ahead.
We laughed back in the day, because when we first started doing deals together, he was asking me for second rounders on every player, and I said, wait a minute, Howie, not every player is worth a second rounder, to your point. And we had a lot of fun like that over the years in dealing and trading with each other and talking about trades. But you're right. You have to be on your toes. If you're a young GM and you're trying to make your way in this league, or even an older GM who may not be as mentally acute as they used to be, look out.
We're talking to Thomas Dimitroff. So you mentioned the quarterbacks. Where do you come out on Bo Nix ending up going number 12 to the Denver Broncos? Do you think that Denver overreached in taking him that high? And what do you think of his pro prospects?
So I like Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is a high competitor. He's mature, which a guy like Sean Payton really appreciates. Sean is going to go in there. This guy's a smart football player. He has experience. I know he moved from Auburn over to Oregon, and he really started thriving in Oregon. I like seeing that change and that ability. Tough, hard-nosed guy is going to run the rock when he has to, but he can also create within a system, which is very good for a guy like Sean Payton to have around him. This is another move for George Payton, the general manager, that's a tough spot to be in after the Russell Wilson thing. That they sat tight there. They didn't move back. They got the guy they wanted. Maybe they could have moved back two or three or a handful of picks. But I think they got a quarterback that they can grow with. And I'm a big believer, and I think you know this, I would start my quarterbacks in this first round out the gate. Make sure you get the right people around them. Supporting cast was huge for us and Matt Ryan. I believe it has to be that way for these young quarterbacks. But they need to play soon, in my mind.
So I appreciate that fact. Where do you make, I mean, if six quarterbacks went in the first 12 picks and then not another one went until the fifth round and that other one was Spencer Rattler, what do you make about his drop? Why do you think he dropped as far as he did?
Well, there was talk about, the league is funny when they start doing their research on players, Jim, and you know this, over the years there have been some guys who have had a little bit of a character issue about them. And they've dropped, or they might have dabbled in smoking too much weed or whatever it was. We often joked around about it when a player comes out and he's potentially tested positive at a school, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. That means 28 times. That's kind of a joke. But the reality is, football people tend to really dig in and try to determine the levels of what they have to deal with. A quarterback's situation, however, Jim, is very different than another position on the field, right? Those guidelines and the benchmarks are so high that something that might be a little bit concerning teams will really dive into and they'll really scrutinize that player. The fact that people are commenting on the Netflix special with Spencer, I'm not sure where that really comes from. What I will say is people have done their due diligence, continue to dig in on it. I don't believe that was the reason he dropped that low. It might have been. There are certain elements of his game. You know, who knows what it could have been. It could have been his ability to really process as the things were flying around. And decision-making for anyone in this league is complicated, let alone when you're being drafted as a quarterback to come in and hopefully take over a team.
I agree with you. There's no way to me that guy's a fifth-round draft pick because of a Netflix show that was shot when he was in high school. He's a fifth-round draft pick because the league evaluated him as a fifth-round draft pick. Would you agree?
I agree. 100%.
All right, so since one non-draft question, because, again, you are uniquely positioned to weigh in on this because you work for Bill Belichick in New England and Arthur Blank in Atlanta, what do you make of that recent ESPN report that Robert Kraft warned Arthur, quote, not to trust Bill, and that Belichick was, quote, extremely difficult to work with? Can I get your reaction to that?
The only thing that I thought about that way, about that, honestly, Jim, was Arthur Blank is a very strong man and has his own strong opinions about how he wants to do things. And, you know, of course, he's like anyone in this league, people are always going to look and try to gather the right information. When I looked at that whole thing and when I watched the documentary, the Patriot documentary, I was amazed at a lot of the stuff that was said, meaning there was a lot of discussions about who was responsible for what. And so I don't know exactly how it was, but in the very end, I think, as I understand, not speaking for Arthur, you know, he did what he thought was best for the organization in hiring Raheem. And as you know, Raheem, highly, highly positive, energetic man to come into this organization and, you know, kind of bolster what was lacking over the last couple of years, unfortunately.
Love his energy. Love Raheem's energy. What about, before you go, Thomas, what about the wide receivers? Like, for instance, you believed in Julio Jones enough when he was coming out of Alabama to use the sixth overall pick on him in the 2011 draft, and obviously that paid major dividends. How impactful do you think this year's collection of receivers is going to be led by Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I love this draft class of receivers. I thought it gave people an opportunity truly to move back and acquire more picks, of course, as we know. I also believe that there were players that were in the second round or later first round that are going to be, I think, significant impact type of players. But when you're talking about Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers kicking it off, that was somewhat synonymous with, you know, Julio Jones and A.J. Green back in the day, right? Different makeups, of course, but it's a conversation to decide which one really fits in with the system. Both of those guys, I think, are fantastic. I love Malik Nabers and the way that he runs his routes, his ability to separate, by the way, which is a massively important thing. And then someone asked me today about the Chiefs and what they did with Worthy and bringing in a guy who's smoking it in 4-2-9 or whatever it was. I can't remember the exact number. Those people are outrageously difference makers with the speed if you can get them the ball properly. So I love seeing what they're doing in Kansas City, bringing that back another speed guy to replace who left to the Dolphins, of course.
Hey, Thomas, I do too. I love that pick for KC, but I got to admit, I didn't love Buffalo making that deal with KC, their arch rival, and they add a burner to their wide receiver room. What did you think about that deal that Buffalo made?
We've always talked about it as team builders and general managers that you try to avoid trading with your nemesis, right? Your competitors like that. I was a little bit surprised. I will say Brandon Bean is a really smart football man.
Agreed.
And he knows what he's doing. So yeah, he must have seen and they must have discussed as well head coach Sean McDermott. I have a great deal of respect for that group. So they must have looked at it in a way that they were trying to get more, you know, to build more on the back end and value. When you start looking at the value of the second, you know, beyond the first round, there's some very good value picks out there, and I think they were probably thinking along those lines.
No, I think you're right. I agree with you. I just can't imagine them helping their arch nemesis that they can't get over. But then I see Keon Coleman, and maybe it's just content to me, but did you see the young man at his intro presser and the kind of vibe and the kind of chemistry or the kind of charisma that he was throwing off? Does that pique your interest at all, or are you just kind of looking at this thing really analytically?
I try to look at it as analytically as possible, although, I mean, I am a big people person and a believer in what that person is bringing to your organization and how they're gonna keep things positive and who's gonna lead along with the quarterback, and I think that's a really important part. But I did not spend time really analyzing Keon Coleman and his approach.
Thomas, your energy is just off the charts, even for you. You're supposed to be tired after the draft, man. What are you running on right now?
You know what's funny? I had a great ride the last 2 days. But by the way, I have only taken a long bike ride before any draft of all of my life, in the 28 years, especially as a GM. I was out there the other day feeling a little bit melancholy not going in to make picks. Maybe that's all just kind of bundled up right now.
Seriously, you still feel that way? I mean, I respect it, but you still get those kind of pangs, don't you?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, this is such a wonderful sport, and we know why we love it so much. There's so much passion in it, and passion about building something that can be special and know that you're going to win. I say it all the time. There's nothing like it. You know, there's nothing like the emotion of pulling down a Super Bowl. I was never able to do it as a GM, but I was able to do it around some great people in New England. And, you know, there's a pang for that forever in my life.
All right, but you're killing it in business, and you're the CEO of Sumer, and you're still working very closely with teams. Does that approach that feeling, or does nothing approach that feeling?
I don't think anything truly approaches it. I love, you know, successes in business as I'm learning about this business, as you can imagine. But, you know, listening to your pods, talking about life after 55 or 55 and on, it's different. It's all about longevity, right? Keep the passion and positive passion and persevering elements of our personalities. I think it goes a long way. And I always have to keep that in mind, of course.
No, I appreciate that. I'm trying to let you go, but you keep saying interesting things. How much of that is about those bike rides? How much of those bike rides help you? And then are you mixing in weight training too? What are you doing to stay as fit and as positive and as energetic and as clear mentally as you are?
You know, I think the bike rides are really important for me, of course. I love physicality. I have a home in Boulder, Colorado, which I love getting to as well, being there, being able to be out in the mountains, being able to mountain bike and road ride. I'm a big believer, as you know, you and I have talked about being mindful about, you know, our food and how we approach it. I think I've mentioned recently that I am pescatarian, but I'm very mindful of making sure that I am keeping all the proper ingestion of making sure that my stomach and my world is feeling good. I'm talking internally, right? Because we know how important it is to be on top with what we're eating and how we're making sure that we're cleansing ourselves. Recently, I just got into something that people were advertising here, and it's this new bed out there, this immortal bed thing, which is fascinating. And I think where they're going right now with longevity, you and I just need to continue to tap into that.
No, my man, you're killing that part of it. I'm not. I'm failing in two large areas that you just mentioned, gut health and sleep. So I need to work on those things. You know, it's interesting. One last thought. So we sent our younger son to Boulder. He's a freshman at the college right now. And Thomas, he played high school baseball, so he was really active in the weight room, getting a lot of things done. It's kind of funny. He hasn't gained any weight. The kid is rail thin. He's like 6'2". I don't know what he weighs right now, but he dropped a ton of weight. He's not picked up any weight since going to college. But he's not in the gym at all, and part of it is the weather, all right? So what's my advice to the kid? Like, he'll hit the mountain. He'll hit the mountain, but he's not out. He's not going to the gym at all. So what am I going to tell this kid?
No, I love that. You asked me about weight training, and I realize more and more I'm getting back into weight training because I know how important it is on the core side of things and the explosiveness side of things. Yeah, it's so hard when you're in Boulder, man. There's so many cool things to do there that pique your interest, but you got to be underneath that iron, man. There's no question about it. You and I need to. And how old is he right now?
He's 19.
Yeah, man. That's pretty cool to have him there, though. Hopefully he just continues to learn how important it is to get that strong base going for sure.
No doubt. Thomas Dimitroff, he is the CEO of Sumer Sports. Very, very good friend of mine personally and of the program. My man, you have never sounded better. You have never been better. Appreciate you so much, and especially the advice on the back end. Thomas, thank you so much. We'll do it again soon.
Love being on. Thanks so much, Jim.
You're my dude. Thomas Dimitroff, I love that conversation. And before you say, hey, Rome, that's a reinvention project. Oh, I know. No, I know. He inspires the hell out of me. And for a number of different reasons, you know, somebody in his 50s who understands longevity, he's pushing himself mentally, he's pushing himself physically. And I love also that he admits, yeah, man, I miss it. I miss it. I miss that juice. I miss that energy. Of course you want to build something. And he is building something. That's the irony.